Hey everyone, I'm Jay.
I'm Sophia.
And I'm Scott, and welcome to Witches Betwixt.
It has been a minute.
A fucking minute.
It's been a while. We took a break, kind of like we were talking about. There's a lot of things we were really talking about before we had the break. I noticed were reoccurring themes in the episode, such as me moving and not having time planning Pagan Pride. And I've moved, and Pagan Pride is planned over, and it was a huge success. So now is kind of naturally the time to end the break. It's getting toward the end of September. We're starting to get into the swing of recording, and it's just really good to be back. I'm really happy to be back, and I'm sure the other two are just.
I'm nervous, but excited.
Yeah, it is a little nerve-wracking. It almost feels like we're doing it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know. But yeah, so today we're gonna just ease into an easy topic. But I think over our break, I think it all gave us the opportunity to be very reflective, introspective. So we're gonna be talking about what got us into the craft, what got us into witchcraft, and also really getting into discuss what it means to really be a witch. You know, just because we weren't podcasting doesn't mean that we weren't witching in other ways. And so we're going to really delve into kind of just tying in our experiences over the break, mm-hmm. and just really getting into answering those two questions. So let's start off with the easy thing to discuss before we get all heady and in our feelings about things and such. So let's start with the easiest one. What the hell have we all been doing while we've been slacking off on the podcast? Anyone want to take a first? I know, at me. Anyone want to take a first? Just, like, fill us in on what's been going on.
So I think it's pretty much easy for me to go first. So really, for me, it's just been about trying to situate my life, get myself together. Some personal stuff, trying to get school situated. Some things didn't go as planned, but it wasn't horrible. I do go back in January. It's all set up. I was supposed to be back by now, but it's all good. I've been doing really well with therapy. I've been making, like, important phone calls on my own without, like, having to have a buffer. So I've been talking to people and doing stuff like that, so that's pretty great. I've been without my therapist because I haven't had a meeting with her. She's been away for 3 weeks, so for over a month. But I've been doing really well. So that's pretty great for me. Other than that, it's just like I said, just sorting out myself. Oh, and of course, helping with Pagan Pride Day as ritual coordinator, which went really well.
Hell yeah.
Which was awesome.
Awesome. Sophia, you want to go next?
I feel like I have the most to talk about.
Okay.
Sure.
That's fair.
I can go for it. I'll go for it.
Sure.
So okay. I flew to South Korea. I was a complete fish out of water. I'll tell you this. It's very interesting to go to another country that's completely unlike your own. Well, maybe not completely. There's a lot of similarities. But it's even wilder to do it when you can't even talk and try and say something in Korean. So it was a struggle to like just keep myself fed. Transit was amazing. I wish y'all could see what Seoul's like just to take by bus because it's so efficient. And as you can hear, I have a different sort of voice now. It's like a higher pitch. It's supposed to shift a little bit throughout the next year, raise more. But this is where we're at right now, and I'm pretty happy with it. And then after that, I kind of fell into a mess. I've been, like, in a bit of a slump for a few months, and I'm kind of starting to pull myself out of it. I've also started writing a lot more poetry, so that's been keeping me going. I don't really have a therapist. I can't afford one, so I use therapy in lieu of that, and that's been very positive for me, and it's taken me in a good direction. And I'm starting work making bath bombs soon, so yeah, and going to my brother's wedding, and oh my god, my life is so busy. I can't even keep up right now.
Sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just to fill anyone in who might be tuning in, and if this is your first time finding this podcast, the reason The reason that Sophia was in South Korea was because she was getting a surgery.
Yep.
If you want to explain, which is why you couldn't talk. It wasn't just a language barrier issue.
I physically couldn't speak from voice surgery. I'd expect that anybody listening to this would have been here for the earlier episodes, but that's a good point. Yeah. I got voice surgery at the Izon Voice Center, and it was stressful, but worth it, but stressful. So, yeah.
What was that like to just, like, because I imagine, like, in South Korea, you might be able to navigate with just English. Like, you might be able to get by, maybe.
So, I was really lucky, and someone I made friends with about a year prior to my surgery moved to South Korea to teach English. So, I stayed in his apartment that was approximately the size of my bedroom. No, I'm not understating that.
Wait, his whole apartment was that big?
Yes, I'm not kidding. It was about the size of my bedroom. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Where's the bathroom?
The bathroom is so small that my knees would touch the wall when I'd sit on the toilet, like the wall in front of me.
Wow.
And the shower.
Just a stall shower.
The shower was attached to the sink, so the whole bathroom would drain down through a drain, and you would just like shower in the same area where you'd use your toilet paper and everything. And
like the whole bathroom was just like, it was like a shower with like a sink and a toilet inside of it.
Kind of, yeah.
Wow.
In a cabinet. Damn. Yeah, very multifunctional. The city was very, very cool. There's like no wasted space. There's like restaurants and arcades above the restaurants and stuff, and just really cool, you know. It was very fun to visit.
I want to go. At some point, either like that or like Tokyo or something like that. I think that'd be cool, just to have a completely like different experience.
Yeah. Now, to comment on the witch side of that, I had trouble doing magic while I was over there, because normally I'll do something to like make a stoplight switch faster than it might normally. Couldn't get it to work completely. Fish out of water for the period I was there. I got a bit more in tune with it towards the end of my stay, and I could start kind of making stuff work, but like the moment I went there, I was like just fucked, honestly.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible like how much your location really impacts your ability to do magic, especially when you're in such a foreign country. It's just completely different from what you're used to, so I can imagine that would be very disorienting.
The thing was, I could do magic that would, like, affect my immediate environment, like me or people, but I couldn't do stuff to affect, like, the land, you know? Like, I couldn't make the light switch, because that's part of, like, the physical environment, you know? So it was like, maybe I hadn't been in tune with stuff. I don't know. I'd have to think about it more. Yeah.
That's actually, we should probably write that down as a topic for next... For another episode, witchcraft in foreign places, perhaps. That could be an interesting topic.
What about you, Jay? What'd you get up to?
So, as I kept talking about in a bunch of previous episodes, I'm moving in Pagan Pride, and I can hear myself in the past just rambling on about it. But it's true. I have moved, and Pagan Pride has been a thing. So I moved not far. I'm still in Philly, still up in the northeast section of Philadelphia. Me and Joyce actually moved in together in a house that my grandfather owns. He doesn't live here, but he just owns this house. And, you know, we're just kind of just paying the utilities. And just, he's really cutting us a break on that. So that's awesome. So I have a house now, and I have a lot more space to record. I have a lot more... I could just do my thing. You know, I wasn't, worrying about, like, an immediate roommate in the immediate space where we, you know, we live, work, and breathe in the same in the same room. So this is going to be a lot better. So I, for me personally, I want to start making additional content for the channel. I really want to try and get into things like vlogging or short videos and stuff like that. Stuff that I can just record on my own, but now I finally have the space to do that. And so I think that's gonna really put a nice spin on the channel, because we can do a lot of different creative things now. Also, if at any point, if Sophia ever wanted to actually come to Philly, you have a place to stay. So yeah. And you don't, and it's way cheaper than a hotel because it costs you $0. So yeah, I'm just happy about it. I really feel like I have control over my life right now, just to some degree. My job is relatively stable. I've moved in a stable situation, so I feel like I can really start to branch out on a lot of my creative ideas and stuff that I want to do for this, and you know, just other things that that I work on. We've unpacked pretty well. I really like where there's still some boxes floating around and stuff like that, but we've unpacked pretty well, and I'm pretty proud of us for that. My next goal is to tackle the basement down there, so I can have like an actual like ritual gaming space.
Hell yeah!
Because I'm not gonna let my cats downstairs once they come here, so I can leave like permanent altars set up, or I can leave like gaming tables, you know, permanently set up. You know, don't lose our place or whatever we're doing.
Oh, so. I thought you meant PS4 gaming, and I was to be like, yeah, I could finally like see you on for a change.
Oh yeah, that's in my bedroom. That's already set up. The PS4 okay. is in my bedroom. I might move it down the basement. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about it just yet. But yeah, I'm super excited. I'm really happy that I've finally moved, and I just feel like I can do a lot more creative things. So that's really, it's really improved my mood and lowered my anxiety. The oh, yeah. other thing that I was always talking about was Philadelphia Pagan Pride Day. I was, I'm the new president and local coordinator this year, so I had a lot on my plate, and I knew it would be a lot, and I knew it would be a lot of work, but I wasn't quite aware of just how many moving pieces really go into planning an event. And you would think, oh, it's an easy little event, it's just in a park, like, it can't be that big of a deal, but I learned there are just, there are a lot of things. We had a couple of snafus. There were minor things that I don't think the general attendees really noticed. Like, in the beginning, we really didn't know what we were doing, because none of us really worked the welcome tent before in previous years, so we kind of just, like, just were just winging it up there, and Joyce did really awesome, you know, doing the raffles and stuff like that, and that was great. Oh, yeah. We started main ritual, or opening ritual, like 20 minutes late, because we were still getting set up. And then there was like someone brought a generator, and then it conflicted with like, you know, events and stuff like that. But I then lost. I found that I actually, well, no, it wasn't even the park permit. And that's the thing, is like I wouldn't. It was okay, like I didn't mind, and the park permit allowed for it. They were allowed to have it. It was just that I didn't realize that I had put them very close to the main event space, like where we're gotcha. Holding rituals and stuff. And so I felt bad. I was like, could you just turn it off, like, while we do this? And they were really nice about it. They were very sweet about it. They actually ended up donating a chalice to Philly Pagan Pride.
Hell yeah.
From their shop. Bless you. They ended up donating a chalice to Philly Pagan Pride for us to use on our altar in the coming year. So I thought that was really sweet.
That's right.
Just next year, I know just not to place them near the near where all the main stuff is happening. And then the other issue was the damn toilets. They arrived within their window, but they left us half a roll of toilet paper per unit. I ordered a regular and a handicap unit, and there was a half roll of toilet paper in each. So,
yikes.
Yeah, at one point, me and Scott were hauling ass to the closest gas station that sold toilet paper. And so we're, like, walking back with, like, all these rolls of toilet paper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hot as hell that day, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
In the sun. In the
sun. That, but it was... Yes, in the sun, it felt very warm. And then our protesters We knew they were going to show up. They show up every year. They didn't show up until like 5 o'clock, and our event ran until 6.
Yeah, they were like really late.
They were incredibly late, and it was really funny because like they showed up, and like Joyce was right there at the corner, and they were like, "You're late! Like, come on! Where you been?" Everyone was cheering. Everyone was like, "Oh my god, you showed up! Like, we've been waiting for you," because we've had all these responses prepared for them. Doug had a 1,200 kilowatt speaker, I think it was, or something like that.
Yeah.
Kilo, is that the correct measurement for sound?
I don't fucking know.
Whatever. Point is, that thing was loud. Like, I was like, it was loud. So yeah, Doug had that, and he was blasting, like we were rickrolling them, and we had, like, the song That Never Ends from Lamb Chop. Other than those couple things, it really went off without a hitch. Everyone actually really loved the rituals. Talked to Rob Scott. He loved the rituals. He really had a good time. I was really worried about his approval because he's been the president since the revival of the group. So I'm like, I really wanted to impress him. Because it's had like a little bit of like a heathen flair the past couple years, because Rob and his heathen group have really been the ones kind of on the board and doing it. So this year we just to try to take in a little bit more of like a traditional kind of direction. We tried to take it in like a traditional witchcraft direction, which I think we did pretty successfully with still keeping it palatable for other traditions. And I'm just my mood is just so much better now that those two things have been successfully completed, because now I know I'm like, okay, I moved into the house, I got the space that I need, and now, you know, Pagan Pride is done right now. We're taking a break, and it was successful. So now I feel extra confident for next year. I'm like, well, if I did it this year, it can definitely happen next year, and then next year. So it was just good to, that confidence boost is really what I needed after all that stress. But just that's why we took a break, is because I was doing all this moving. I feel like a lot of it was on me, but I just couldn't keep up with the prepping for the move, and then organizing Pagan Pride. It was too much for me to keep up with doing the podcast, which is why I was just like, I can't, I need a break. But we're back, and I feel like it's kind of fitting. Let's see, Maybon is tomorrow. And I feel like it's really fitting that we're getting back into this now with the dark half of the year.
I wonder what that says about us.
me and Scott actually talked about this before. Like, personally for us, our energy really starts to wane over the summer. Like, as it gets warmer and brighter and hotter, we're not built for the warmth. Like, that's a thing. Like, we just, it's not a thing that we take to very well. We don't like being hot.
I was fairly in tune with the seasons for a while when I lived back in my hometown. During the summer period, I would always be more extroverted, like going out, doing things, building things, making things happen, you know, like moving, shaking. And then the moment that the dark half of the year rolled around, the cold half, I would become much more introspective. I would work on my craft more. I'd be reading more books. I'd be like looking over my life more and what I wanted. And I'd spend more, honestly, more like trip time and meditation time in winter, honestly.
You know what I think that is Canadian winter versus down here.
I mean, you'd be surprised.
Winters are a little more harsh, so it's harder to like get around and, you know what I mean? It's very cold versus here.
Here's the thing. Most of Canada actually lives on the border, right, really close. And the weather of Toronto is not that different from the weather of Chicago, for example. Like, we're maybe a couple degrees Celsius cooler than them at any given point.
That's what I'm saying. Chicago is cold in comparison to Philadelphia.
But also Philly is like really close to a coastal city, right? Like you go to Vancouver, it often doesn't even snow in the winter in Canada, and they have fucking palm trees growing there, right? So it literally just depends on what part of Canada you're in, because not all of it has that really harsh winter.
I guess. I mean, I can't think of. I mean, I feel like I also feel like a lot of people get, because even when you read like any Wiccan book or like I remember the old Wiccan books I used to read like when I was first starting out, like you'd be like, oh, winter is a time of introspection and reflection and stuff like that, and I'm like, I never felt like that. I wanted to party and like really get witchy,
come
which is.
alive during the I come alive during that season, and it's funny because one of my favorite authors, he had said something, and I think I've said it on this podcast before, but I don't mind repeating myself. He once called the fall, well, the winter, just because he uses the only summer and winter calendar. And he once called winter the summer of Elfame, and it was the idea that when in Celtic myth, the spirit world is a mirror of our own, but as mirrors, the reflection is always turned the other way. So when it's night here, it's day there. When it's day here, it's night there. When it's spring here, like first, when it's summer here, it's winter there. So they go in inside and hibernate, and then once it becomes fall or winter here, they come out because it's summer there. And so the summers of Elfame meaning elf land. So yeah, that's always for me. I think it's just because for me, it's always just been because the spirits are coming out more. The as you call it, the veil is thinning, which is interesting because I have a new perspective on the veil altogether as well. So that's really cool. But anyway, but yeah, so that's what I think it is. I think it's just like I really think that people in general, we connect to different. We connect in different ways, to different like the way it's vibrating and shifting and moving. And yeah, I think that's what that is. Just because there are some people who really thrive in the warmer weather, even their magic. I've heard a lot of witches talk about paying attention to your personal season. When do you feel most alive and most powerful, and when don't you? Sometimes our power comes and goes.
I was gonna say, and I've been finding as I get older that like my when I was young, my favorite seasons were the extremes. Like I loved being able to like go out in summer and like just the burning heat of the desert and swim all the time. And I kind of enjoyed winter, but now I'm enjoying the middle in between seasons, like spring and autumn. And it's just I appreciate just like sitting on my porch when it's raining. And like playing some lo-fi hip hop or something like that on a YouTube channel and
It's
writing
been my new
poetry.
obsession.
Yeah.
Lo-fi hip hop. Like I'm telling you, like
It's funny. It definitely is one of those situations where it really leads for us as occult practitioners to really pay attention to our bodies, to ourselves, to our own psyches and our own nature,
Yeah.
It really, makes you question, what is being a witch, and when did you really start feeling that calling,
Huh.
Yeah.
That's actually an interesting point. I never really thought about when I started feeling that. Like, what was the def like, what was the thing?
This is the origin story episode.
And like, we kind of covered this
In a
a
past,
bit, like in the beginning. We kind of covered it in the beginning, but maybe like, this is a different, like, more in-depth kind of
yeah, because we're
take
actually
on it.
talking about that. Like we introduced ourselves, but we never like
Yeah, like
talked about
I
what
was
started the
16, and then
journey.
I read the book, and then I said the words,
Yeah,
and I did the thing, and I had the dream.
we never had that talk. You get to
Yeah,
learn
so
about
I don't
us
know. We
today.
kind of glossed over it before, but I don't know, Scott. You bring up an interesting point of that feeling, like that first time, like
Yeah.
that spark. I don't know. I think for me, it was probably even earlier than me actually reaching out and researching witchcraft and stuff like that. me, this is going to sound ridiculous, but me and my mom were really into watching Xena, Warrior Princess, which is an amazing show. An amazing, amazing show. Not only the overarching, you know, like, lesbian tones in the show, I mean, let's be real, it was, like, all the Greek gods were there. Like, they were part, like, they were characters in the show. Like, she interacted with the different Greek gods and stuff like that. And I was just like, who are these things? And it was like, oh, I'm the god of blah, blah, blah. I'm the god of this. And I was like, there can be gods of stuff. Like, there's not just, like, God, you know? Like, there's gods of things. Gods of war. Gods of love. And I'm like, well, that's kind of cool and kind of makes more sense than, like, you know, one god kind of just running the show. And I was young, like, probably, like, before 10 years old.
Yeah.
And I think it was, and then that was, then it was my draw to, it was my draw to fantasy that I think was my underlying gateway into my interest in witchcraft. And then all I can hear everyone screaming right now, Harry Potter, Harry Potter, you know, blah, 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 blah. But it's really funny because I didn't really get into Harry Potter until after I saw a bunch of articles. I ran across, like, some Christian news website or something that was, like, saying, these Harry Potter books talk about witchcraft and they're getting kids into witchcraft. And I was like, well, that sounds cool. And that's how I found Harry Potter, was actually because of the article, like, damning the Harry Potter series. And Star Wars, too. Believe it or not, as something as sci-fi as Star Wars, I really love the idea of the Jedi and the Sith. And, you know, they have this power that they tap into, this universal, yeah, this force that they tap into, and they make things happen. So I think a lot of my, like, that interest, like, that's like that tickling of your brain really comes from sci-fi and fantasy media, just consuming that media and just saying, like, I feel like if someone's writing about this, it can't be that unreal. Like, it has to come from somewhere. Where do these ideas come from? And I think I really started to formulate that at a young age. And so when I stumbled across that article and it was like Harry Potter and witchcraft and Wicca, and I was like, well, what's that? And that's, yeah, really what led me down there, was just that, well, this causes this. And I was like, well, that might be something I'm interested in, because I really like these books. I really like this genre. Yeah.
Talk about a counterproductive fucking article. Am I right?
I know. That person writing the article is probably like, fuck, I fucked up. Yeah, I guess that was it. What really, if I really had to say, like, what, why am I a witch? What got me into being a witch? What started me on the path? Whatever the exact phrasing of the question was, I think it was like, it was striving to bring that fantasy, even though I know it wasn't, it's like I knew there was truth in the fantasy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was truth in there. Just like there's real magic in Grimm's fairy tales, you know? I just wanted to get into the fantasy. That's really what it was. I wanted to extract the truth from the fantasy and bring it into my own life, and that's what I ended up doing.
Cool.
Yeah, I get that. I get it on the level of, like, for me it was, I needed to understand, like, so growing up, a lot of people always assumed that my gateway was fantasy because I loved Harry Potter, but Harry Potter was not my entry point. I love fantasy, but for me it kind of started similar in the sense that, like, I wanted to know what was behind the fantasy, you know, where did it all come from? But it was because of personal experiences that I was having. You know, in grade school, I was experiencing strange things, and I needed to make sense of it. And I remember sitting in catechism, or CCD, as they call it in Roman Catholicism. And
I also stopped that at a young age, too. I remember being uncomfortable with Catholicism.
Were we all fucking raised Catholic? Because I went to catechism too. Good God damn it.
Yeah, I went to CCD. Up until,
I wasn't
like,
allowed to stop. I actually made my confirmation.
Same. Yeah.
I didn't even make it to the, what's the first thing?
Communion?
Communion. That's the
one. Anyway.
I never made it to that. I was like, I'm out.
I remember sitting in CCD, and I remember my CCD instructor, and her name was Ida, and Ida actually was a sweetheart. Like, as a person, she was very nice. However, there was a part in the Bible where it says, thou shalt not, what is it? Basically talk to people who can speak to the dead, or practice speaking to the dead. And I remember, you know, I knew that I was seeing ghosts, but you're a kid. I was in grade school. I had no one to tell that I was seeing things, you know, especially because people think you're seeing things, you know. But the thing is that I was lucky because my mom was having experiences along with me in the sense that I was able to tell her things that I otherwise wouldn't have been able to know about people, about places, about objects. And, I started reading about the paranormal, just, you know, about ghost hunting and parapsychology. And then one day it was a website that was like, like one of those really cheesy Wicca, like banner things on those old, like Angel Fire, Geosites, whatever.
where they literally got like the header on fire in like this terrible font as it's pixelating.
Or like the spinning tentacles.
This was like an ad you can click. It was like a really old ad.
Yeah.
And it was like this like really like cheesy image of like a very stereotypical witch with like glowing swirly things. Mm-hmm. And it said, cast the most powerful protection spell. And I was like, something about something Wicca.com. And I was like, what's a Wicca?
What's a Wicca? <You know>?
Yeah. Like, what's that? I was like, did that say cast a spell? I want to do that. And then, you know, it gave me answers, you know, like I finally got some answers and I finally felt powerful. That was another thing too. I was very disempowered as a kid, you know. I felt I had no control. I needed power. I'm not even going to shy away from it. So many of us are so scared to admit that we come to witchcraft for power. But underneath of it, at least in the beginning, that's why you started this. You know what I mean? You wanted power to control yourself.
Because it's like, you want to be able to affect your life, your immediate surroundings. You want to be able to take charge of your life, but you can't do that if you have no power to do so.
And that's something I was going to say, too, is, like, I was thinking about it a while ago on a completely unrelated subject. What does power mean? What is power as a concept, as an abstract? And the answer that I landed on is power is the ability to affect change in your environment. If you were going to reduce it to exactly its most base function, that's it. And the more power you have, the more change you can make, and the easier it is, and the greater success you'll have. That's it. So if you're coming to magic for knowledge, well, knowledge is a form of power, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's very true. And then, you know, you also think of, like, the time, it's from Spider-Man, right? With great power comes great responsibility. And when you really get in, you really can't go wrong. But it's true, you know, when you do start getting involved in those types of powers, you really have, you learn very quickly or you get burnt. Or, you know, you can go on a bit of a power trip for a while, but eventually you get burnt. You know,
and sometimes you get burnt and then you learn quickly.
That too. Yeah. And sometimes you get burnt and you don't learn. I was pretty cautious. I'm just a cautious person in general, so I think now I'm starting to get more ballsy and adventurous in what I do versus when I was younger.
Go ahead.
I'm so sorry. I just wanted to say, because I know this will surprise Jay a lot. Maybe you too. I'm not sure. Sophia. I wasn't always as ballsy as when you met me. This the ballsy magician, like the witch, the ballsy witch Scott, who, you know, will conjure what I have to and do what I must, and, you know,
fucking shit up.
That actually kind of very loosely started in high school, because I can no longer really understand the theology of Wicca anymore. And I think I've said before the whole incestuous nature of the god and goddess in Wicca kind of freaked me out a little bit.
Yeah, and I understood the symbolism. Like, I was mature enough then to understand the symbolism behind it.
Yeah, but, I did too, but...
But I was also like, it's still kind of...
That shit still squicks me, even if I understand the fucking symbolism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly.
So I just couldn't really get behind it. Plus, I don't know. I it's funny, because I love the seasons, and I'm very earth-centered. But I'm also not one of like a fertility worshipping witch. Like, that's not like I don't care about, like, you know how like a lot of Wicca is focused on like fertility. And
you're not gonna land in a Dianic cult.
I think as queer people, we tend to shy away from fertility.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah. The fertility-based things, because fertility very quickly devolves into, like, a very binary, heteronormative sort of discussion. Yeah. It's kind of where it goes, you know, man, woman, this, that. So, I think it just kind of makes me uncomfortable, because I never, even when I was identifying as female and living as female, mm-hmm. I never wanted to, like, the idea of being pregnant, it was just like, no.
And fertility is a very touchy subject for a lot of trans people for obvious reasons that I'm not going to state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Now it's actually more of a touchy subject for me. It is than it was then. Then I was just like a general sense of like uncomfortableness. But now I'm just like, I don't even want to talk about it because it just makes me feel angry.
Yeah,
it makes me feel angry more than anything. More than like upset, just kind of pissed off about that. But I think like that underlying sense of like that fertility kind of based stuff, it just made me uncomfortable. It still does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I know what you mean. Like, there's really not a lot of focus on it. Like, what does it matter? What does it didn't mean? It doesn't really mean much.
Like, it's funny. I don't mind it. Like, when I'm reading like folk magic and cunning folk used to cast fertility rituals for cattle and stuff like that. I really enjoy that stuff. I think that's really cool. But, you know, it's funny because, okay, I want to tell everyone something, because we are recording. I'm 28 now, and I've been having this kind of, I know this is strange, but kind of a pregnancy envy. Like, I wish I could.
Hmm.
Is that weird?
It's a very trans feeling.
And
it's been happening a lot. Like, a lot. And I have never said it to anyone, and now I've said it to whoever watches this
to everyone.
Video.
You've never said it to anyone. I can't relate on that.
I know you can't.
I can't say
I
relate to that specifically, but I can relate in the opposite end of that.
Yeah.
But
like
that's how you relate, right?
To make someone pregnant versus the ability, you know, to be.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I know. And, you know, at first I thought it started as a joke, because it really started with this really great queer movie that kind of played it like a world at evolution where same-sex couples can make a child naturally. Mm. And at first, like, you know, Darian watched it with me, and it was a great film. It's done well. The acting is really great. But all of a sudden, and this, I don't remember when that came out, but and more so now that I turned like 20, like towards the end of 27 and 28. I've been having, like, just kind of, like, I wish I could experience that. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's, like, you know, my agender, like, clock, you know. But I'm still really young. Like, I'm 30 and I still have a family. You know what I mean? I think I'm just, like, starting to hear, you know, just leverage this slightly. I'm just like, okay, we're getting into family making, like, times now, so. But
it's kind of funny how much of, like, yeah, part of it is, like, societal, you know, like, grow up, get married, have kids, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, some
of it is biological. I think some of it is biological.
Some of it is.
Mm-hmm. Like, you see, and you're like, and you feel that twang, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
And you really start to really think about yourself.
I mean, I turned 30 not a month ago. It was like a couple of weeks ago. And I'm still like, I don't think I'm ever going to have kids sort of deal, you know?
Yeah. Like,
I mean, it's not to say they're not good. It's just I think I'm too much of a fucking human trash fire. Not literally, actually. I'd probably be a pretty good mother. But, like, I just don't want the responsibility. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have to, like, have somebody rely on me. Yeah.
Oh, I get that.
Yeah, especially when you're still, like, getting it together. Like, now I'm like, I mean, I still don't even know if I would be like, how I feel about being responsible for someone other than myself, you know? Yeah. It's a lot. It's a scary thing. It's a really scary thing. As queer people, we're in a position that we can be more prepared because of the way that we have to go about having children. You know, we have different avenues that we can explore. So, like, it's more of a planned experience as opposed to, we're going to be parents, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's just a little bit of an advantage. But I think we have kind of strayed a little bit far away from the topic. But it is really interesting to bring that up. And it's kind of interesting that, I mean, we all are approaching that 30 kind of range.
I am 30.
You don't look a day over 21.
People tell me I look 24 all the time, and I'm like, you're crazy.
You do look very young. I think you look younger than 30.
I have this game I play where when I get ID'd, I'm getting ID'd less now that I get older, which is like chill. But like when people do ID me, I'm like, gotcha, I'm actually 30. And they like look at my card extra fucking hard. They're like, she fucked with me. And it's like straight up, no, I'm 30. It's like 1989. And they're just like, fuck.
Oh, shit. Well, now I get carded because I look 12. So people are like, yeah, okay, I'm going to need to see some ID.
You trans boys, you get that fountain of youth, you know what I mean? You get young ever.
But then, like, it switches. Once you got that full facial hair going on, then it's like, you're old.
I guess.
That's okay.
That means that we get a segue to my entry point into witchcraft.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
It wasn't something super grandiose, honestly. It wasn't even, like, my own personal interactions with fantasy that got me into magic. And I could say that I always had the call, you know, like everything, I was always kind of looking for it in it. But like my first experience was, as I said earlier, literally just in a school field in grade school in like grade 5, trying to make a stick move with my mind with my friends because this one kid had learned about it on TV. And did a report on it for school. And so we all thought it was, we were all like, oh yeah, telekinesis, we gotta try and do this, right? So there we are, a bunch of kids out in lunchtime trying to move a stick, and it was a little ridiculous. Turns out I was one of the only kids who didn't think it was a game. And then I just kind of kept looking into it more. I found out about card captors, which was fantastic. I really kind of drew a lot of inspiration from that. And then I started encountering sleep paralysis right around the time that I had my first out-of-body experience. So I kind of just got drawn into it when I was really fucking young, right? And I was raised Catholic, and what made me actually get out of being part of the Catholic Church was having that out-of-body experience when I was about 11 years old. And when that happened, it basically changed my life because it usurped my views of what Catholicism was essentially telling me. So I got out of it as soon as I could. and then just kind of drifted for a while. Some shit went down that kind of pushed me away from magic for a while. Don't really want to get into the tragic details of it. But I kind of found it again at my early 20s through tarot, and then found DKMU eventually, and just kind of got way back into it. And then here I am, you know?
Mm-hmm. I get it.
It's funny. Yeah. You think that origin stories for getting into witchcraft would be so much more like...
Yeah, you would think like a demon knocked on my door and told me to sign the devil's book.
I was getting sleep paralysis and dealing with demons, though. Like, it's not too far off there. And Scott, you dealt with like paranormal activity as a kid all the time, right? Like, we both did. Like... I got into magic really because I was born in the weird. I happened to wind up in a small town where weird shit happened all the damn time. And I just was one of the few people who actually paid attention to it. Mm-hmm. And that's when you pay attention to the weird pays attention to you, and you become fucking weird. Me.
Yeah. Can I just say... Weird.
Go for it.
Sophia, there's, and you said you were the, like, just so happened to be the one kid who didn't think it was a game. I have a story very similar to that in summer camp. Mm-hmm. So it was my last year in summer camp, and I remember I was going to summer camp with this girl who I thought was so fucking cool. She was like a writer. She loved writing fantasy, and she wrote about like werewolves, and vampires, and witches and stuff. And I thought she was friggin' awesome. Well, we have a situation like that with her where I was the only person taking it seriously. So it was her, me, and two other people who I don't remember. Obviously, I was very young. And I was just into Wicca, like just into Wicca. And we were at a park for the day with the summer camp. And I remember we saw like something nailed into a tree, and there was like a clump of fur. It was weird. And I don't know, I can't say for sure that it was actually magic, but it was definitely odd. But she kind of acted out like this story plot. And now I thought she was being dead serious, and she mentioned werewolves. And I was like, oh, I read this and this and this. And I was like, you know, and the thing is that, you know, I'm thinking like we're talking about, you know, werewolves, you know. And I was interested in the occult nature of werewolves. There's a lot of stories that go into that, but I didn't learn, of course, about all those until much later. But anyway, she actually started bullying me when she realized that I was being serious.
What a bitch.
Yeah, and it was funny. We were never friends again after that day. She found me strange that I... She found me weird and strange that I actually, quote-unquote, believed in werewolves, which, I mean, sure, but I have many friends who... have all sorts of skin turning and shape-shifting or shape-shifter and skin turner experiences, you know, and so yeah, like I do believe in strange things like that, and she started bullying me, like, and the two guys that were with us kind of were like, yeah, that's weird, like, why would you actually think there's real werewolves? And I was like,
Why don't you think there's werewolves? Like, I fail to see the problem here.
Yeah.
I mean, I was very timid, Scott, back then, so of course I was very wounded, you know. I became the little puppy with the tail between the legs, you know. And you just, you know, I don't know. I was silly, you're right, you know, and you agree. But, I mean, it hurt really bad, and I get it. I was the only one in that situation in which... You know, I thought we were being serious, but really she was kind of just very artistic and was kind of acting out this, you know, plot, you know.
It's kind of a shame because generally people who write fantasy, read fantasy, create fantasy tend to be like kind of believers in a way.
Which just, you know, I always feel like that as well. I was always shocked that she wasn't more open-minded.
Well, actually, I don't know. I mean, you look at J.K. Rowling, like, she might be, like, a non...
She's actually super close-minded. She actually...
She's a fucking TERF.
She is a TERF. But other than being a TERF, she's...
Yes.
It is. Yeah, it is.
By her own, by her own treats.
That's upsetting.
It's super, yeah, it is. But,
yeah.
What should I call it? She also is very non-believing. She actually did an exhibit in the UK, which I would still really want to go to. And they ended up pulling out really antique magical items from Europe. They actually have real alchemist tomes from the iron, yeah, like preserved alchemist tomes that they found in the library of the British Library, whatever it is.
That sounds cool.
And they have, yeah, and like she was like, oh, it's, you know, and it was funny though because she was kind of like calling those people like primitive and like. She was kind of like all the magic that she wrote about, like the mandrake root, you know, the sorcerer's root. They had like a, I don't think it was a real root. I think it was a resin, you know, but it was like an actual replica of a real magical aficionalis root. And, you know, and she was like, you know, I always thought it was so interesting, you know, but she found it interesting, but she found it kind of, like I said, primitive, which is the word she used. And I was like,
so maybe she was into the history and not necessarily like the probability or reality of it being real.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Maybe she drew on the history of European magic and witchcraft for her books as inspiration, but not necessarily like,
yeah.
And even then her stuff's very loosely based on it. Like, if anything, she draws her elements more from mythology, if you notice. Like,
yeah.
Phoenix, centaur, all, like, the mythological creatures. Like, she's very much based herself in the mythological aspects. Because it would be extremely easy to access a lot of actual witchcraft knowledge and put it in if she wanted to, right? She didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, with her influence.
Yeah, I think she just kind of... Yeah, she took just some... took inspiration, I guess, from history and from mythology and stuff like that. I would not say that there is actual witchcraft in the Harry Potter books.
No.
There's nothing there. The only thing that could maybe you could technically argue is real witchcraft is the fact that Harry's mother sacrificed herself to save him.
Hmm.
I mean,
I guess you could argue there's real power in that, you know what I mean? Like the idea of that.
And the concept, I get what you're trying to get.
Not like it's an actual spell, but you know, like that idea of sacrificing yourself to save your child. Like, yeah.
One thing she did do that you can tell, Horcruxes are based off of witch bottles because it's the idea of Voldemort breaking himself into several pieces so that he could not be destroyed, harmed, or cursed or whatever. And that's the same concept behind making a bunch of witch bottles with your essence in it or your body part in it and burying it all around wherever you go, you know?
I was going to say, there are, I actually had two teachers from when I worked at Harry's Occult Shop years ago, who did say if there were two real bits of magic in the Harry Potter series, it would have been the Horcrux and the Pensieve.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. He kind of alluded to the Pensieve as kind of, I'm trying to remember, kind of like the well that Odin looked in to receive the rune. Kind of like being able to store memory and knowledge. And then he didn't really go into too much detail, but his name was Sven. He was good people.
Sven.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So this actually has me kind of thinking about the next half of this episode because we got into talking about J.K. Rowling and how it's so many people blame her for being the cause of so many young people getting into Wicca and witchcraft. And yet there is actually not a drop of real witchcraft in her books. No shade. They're great. It's a great story, but there's just no real witchcraft in it.
Even she would admit that, yeah.
Right. And a lot of people call her a witch. You know what I mean? Like, she's a witch. She's written these books. Bless you. You know, she's written these books about witchcraft and wizards and all these kinds of things. It's like, and all these people call her a witch, and yet she's like, no, I'm not a witch. So really, I think this really drives some of the question of what is a witch? Just, you know, is it just because, like, calls you a witch is because you make really good tea? You know, like, it's just like, what is a witch?
Well, I will have you know that I do hand blend my own tea from my herbs that I get from the apothecary and in nature.
As you should. But see, some would argue, right? See, if you didn't do that. See, I buy tea bags a lot of
times. I use tea bags, too. There's certain stuff you just can't get out of a herbal blend that you're making yourself.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just funny because, like, some people would argue, like, oh, you know, if you're a real witch, then you handcraft your own loose teas versus you dipped in tea bag in there sometimes and call it a day, you know? Well, yeah, let's get into talking about that.
All right.
What is a witch? What makes a witch a witch?
Can I take off on this one? Because I have a pretty clearly defined idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, I don't like to be gatekeeper-ish at all with this. So I define it simply that if you say you're a witch... Oh, that's my alarm. If you say you're a witch and you have a practice you do, then you're a witch. Your practice could be anything from reading tarot, talking to spirits and giving offerings in your backyard, or devotional work, or setting up sacred spaces, or studying and trying to learn. Like, if you have something that you're actually putting genuine effort into, and you sincerely believe that you're a witch, then you're a witch. Why I have such a clearly defined picture of this is because I had a debate with a friend a while ago, because I was saying I really don't like how there's a lot of goth girls who love witch aesthetic, where they'll wear the skulls, they'll have the pentagrams, you know, and they'll have like zodiac and like, you know, planetary sigils and alchemical markings and stuff, and they'll be like, I'm a witch, and you'll be like, oh cool, what do you do? And then she'd be like, what do you mean, what do I do? I'm a witch, that's what I do. And it's like, you know, there's more to it than that. Like, you do stuff when you're a witch. It's not just like passively, I am here, I am witch. Like, it's magic is the act of doing, and you have to have like a will to make something happen. Even if it's like, my will is to learn and better myself, or my will is to help my friends get housing, you know, like you're
it's
doing
like when people are like
it.
When people are like, I'm a writer, and you're like, oh,
yeah,
cool.
Well,
what are
you
working
write?
On? And what are you writing? Do you write every day? And they're like, oh, well, you know, like...
Exactly. It's
stuff, like, in the work.
It's
exactly.
The exact
it's just
same
like,
thing,
well, you're
yeah.
not a writer unless you're writing. You're not a witch unless you're witching. You know, like, what are you witching well, about? What are you doing?
And that's the thing. Even if you're, like, learning to be a witch and you're still reading, or say you like the theoretical end, like, I don't want to, like... crap on anybody who really actually fits an armchair role, because some people do better when they really intellectualize something and don't do large amounts of ritual. Like, I know people who would talk you up and down hours about how much like Kabbalistic and Hermetic theory they have, and like how much actual quantum mathematics they can do, and just all this crazy stuff, but they do so little ritual, right? But I would never not call that person a magician or wizard, if that's what those people often prefer. The people at the math like to call themselves wizards for reasons unknown to me. But yeah, you know, it's a matter of just having a practice that's meaningful to you and helps you do something with it, whatever your will may be, you know?
If I can also just say that the word wizard was once taken very seriously. There was a time in Europe where the word wizard was taken very seriously. Unfortunately, modern fantasy has twisted that for us. I, however, have choose to. I don't go by that, but I have friends who do, and I choose to see them as equally valid as is any other title of of the class.
I definitely know some wizards for sure.
But I completely agree with everything you just said. I like how you said if you call yourself a witch, you're a witch. Mm-hmm. But I love how you kind of preface that with kind of the idea of putting in the work.
Yeah.
So, but I don't see, that's not, some people might even consider that gatekeeping, depending on how sensitive people get. But I don't think that that's, I don't think that's how, I don't think that's gatekeeping. That's my perspective as well. If you can call yourself a practitioner, whatever that role might be, really, and you do the work, and I'm not going to lie, I might be a little bit bitchy about this too, but I also say you could do the work and are effectual at your work, if you are manifesting your work as well, but, you know, that's also not to say that a new witch just starting out learning to do crap, you know what I mean? So yeah. I guess it really depends. I think it's really about the seriousness in which the person takes their craft. You know what I mean? The dedication, the sincerity in which they put in the work. Mm-hmm. Oh, yay. I just refined my definition.
Oh, yeah.
I can weigh in a bit. I don't disagree with either of you, really, Sophia. You kind of hit it on the head for kind of how I feel about it. Because there are a lot of people, and now that it is approaching Halloween season, I've been thinking about this more. Because a friend of mine posted, you know, like, hey, don't buy the fucking Indian costume or the Native American costume, like, that's a culture, not a costume. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed that there was a witch doctor costume,
mm-hmm.
which there's always been witches and wizard costumes, and that never really bothered me. But there's a witch doctor costume, which, you know, that really comes from, it's like hoodoo and voodoo, right? It's kind of like interchangeable there, the concept of a witch doctor. I think it's more voodoo.
It's actually, I mean, a witch doctor would probably be more voodoo than anything else.
It would be
African. It would be African, not necessarily voodoo, because witch doctor is like a shaman in Africa. So they don't, not necessarily working with the Lawa or the Orisha or the people who watch, if any who practice Palo, I'm sorry, I don't remember what your spirits are called, but are within them either. They don't necessarily work with the same thing. They're a different tradition altogether. So believe it or not, yeah, like for people who practice what we now call hoodoo, so they were generally known as like conjure men. But the thing is that I get what you're saying, and I completely agree. This kind of appropriated African culture, you know, with like a skull mask, which number one is totally, which is Bawan Sumdi, right? I mean, that's the image that they're trying to say. Bawan Sumdi is one half of a marriage of Tulawa. Now, keeping in mind, I'm a non-initiate, so anyone watching this is coming from a non-initiate perspective. So two halves of a married couple of Lawa, so there is Bawan Sumdi and the Mom Brigitte. They are sex, death, and the graveyard. In African, in voodoo, which I actually really love, they don't, life and death, generally they're deities, deities that govern life and death they govern both. Because they see life and death as just a continuum, death and life are the same thing, just different expressions of each. In my very uninitiated, very European perspective of how it works. I think it's beautiful. It's actually one of the most beautiful concepts. Sorry, I totally agree with you. It's totally appropriate to stop doing it.
I mean, and I'm glad you actually provided all that history and depth and background, which is precisely why it's a bit ridiculous to have a witch doctor costume. And I felt kind of bad because I made some purchases when I was at the Halloween store. I bought this, like, steampunk, like, coat thing. But there was actually accessories for the witch doctor costume. And it was this really nice beaded skull necklace. Like, it was, like, this nice brown color. And it was, like, black. And the skull looked really nice. And it was a nice resin. It was a good weight. And it came with a bracelet, too. And I was like, I'm not buying this because it's the witch doctor. I'm buying this because this is incredible ritual jewelry. And I like that symbolism. It was only $10. And it was actually a kind of a good quality for what it was. But I could just think, like, you know, some people. And I also noticed this year at Spirit Halloween, they were actually selling two spell books there.
What?
Yeah.
Like spell books?
I'll show you one. One's not a spell book. One's just kind of like a general knowledge, general interest book. It's called Wikipedia, and it's just a general. And yeah, that's the book that they're selling.
Oh, there. Wait, back it up. I can't see.
Back it up a bit. It's. Yeah.
Oh, it's cursed. It, like, we have the blurred background.
Yeah. So move it, like, directly in front. Put it in front of your face, and then.
Nah, it's not gonna work. Just tell us who wrote it. Give us the title.
So the title of the book is.
This book is literally just titled "Witchcraft: A Handbook of Magic, Spells, and Potions." The author is Anastasia Graywolf. This book. I won't lie. When I saw this book at my local Spirit of Halloween. It's full of folk magic. It's a folk magic book. So you would think I'd be overjoyed, right? Give people, you know, historical folk magic, which this author did. However, it's nothing that I would want young people doing. It's stuff that, like, as we said earlier, you know, get burned, you know, some of it, like, there's a whole chapter back here on necromancy. And as a child, I would have loved nothing more than to go off with my friends as a preteen, too old to dress up, but not too old to have fun on Halloween, go out to a cemetery and start doing things. And then suddenly, you know, their life is falling apart and, you know, they're in their 20s and they're drug addicts. But that's the kind of shit that this stuff does when it goes wrong. So.
Right. And it's kind of funny because it's like, I can almost hear people like, yeah, selling witchcraft books, you know, but I'm like, I am a witch, and yeah, and I get it. Like, that, a book like that should not just be just on the shelves.
You could have so much more responsible books, like ones that talk, like,
but it's a Halloween store. It's not meant, like, it's not, you know what I mean? They just have this book.
Yeah, but, like, they could have, like, done Witchcraft Theory and Practice by Lyda Angeles, and that would have been great. It would have been more than enough information and not enough to fucking shoot themselves in the foot like that. That's a terrible decision. Like, that book that Scott has there is for someone who's already, like, been into witchcraft for ages and knows the repercussions of what they're going to be doing by the time they're getting into that material. This is not something to be sold at just, like, a Halloween store.
See, like they opened...
Because I saw that same book at Barnes & Noble, and I bought it at Barnes & Noble. And when I went in the Spirit of Halloween, I noticed it was also there. And I was like, wait, what? Why is this here?
2019, magic's mainstream.
Yeah, and I get it. I get why it was there. Sabrina's popular. Witches are cool right now. I'm all for that. I'm all for the fantasy because, again, that was my gateway into it. I'm all for the fantasy. I'm all for that. But
it's, like, nice for me to feel cool for once in my life, you know?
Right. Right.
I agree.
Like, it's
agree
cool to be a witch. and I really want to start, like, advertising. I've just now discovered the Wish app. I know I'm like a fucking dinosaur.
I know.
But I've just discovered the Wish app, and there's so much cool shit. You could buy on there.
I will just say we're not sponsored by Wish, but this harness I'm wearing is from Wish.
Yes.
I can
get some garbage from Wish. Yeah, I mean, you can get some shit from there, so read your reviews and look at your pictures and stuff. But yeah, I ordered these two, like, I don't know, I'm trying to go for, like, a modern male witch, like, vibe, I guess. Upgrade from my from my jeans and t-shirts, you know, every once in a while. And, which was really brought on by me buying this steampunk coat. Because what I do is I just wore the, so I can't close the coat, but I can, like, mm-hmm. you know, I can just, like, wear it. It actually
looks
better open. That's
a look, though. That's a fucking John Constantine look.
Yeah. Yeah, but what I did, though, oh my god, it was a sense of, like, such, like, euphoria. Because what I did was I took the coat, and then I kind of, like, pushed the titty back a little bit. So, you know, so it looked like, you know, I'm, like, more flat. And then I had the skull mm-hmm. necklace that I bought, and I was like, oh, well, this is a look. Like, and then it just made me think of that meme where it was like, spells cast, titties out, you know.
which we were talking about last
which time. Which we were talking chat. About, yeah, exactly. And I was like, it's just a whole, it was a whole mood. Like, this whole ensemble was a whole mood. But yeah, that burst of confidence that I felt, I was like, I really kind of want to look the part. More, I guess,
yeah.
in a way.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. As much as I was saying earlier, like, there's those goth girls who wear the witch aesthetic. Like, I get why you do it, hon. Like, I fucking do. I love it. Look at this. It's fantastic. This is like, what I wanted to dress like as a child, you know? But if you just want to look like a witch, that's cool, too. Like, I'm not going to tell you you can't have it. Just don't say that you're actually a fucking witch, right? Unless, like, what are you trying to do? Scare children's, like, assert yourself like you have power? Like, ooh, I'm a witch. You better be careful. I'll put a little curse on you. You know, right. Like, come on.
It could be it.
I mean, but realistically, I mean, I think, okay, look. I think all real, well, many real witches are sucker for the aesthetic.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for the aesthetic. Now I don't really dress it just because I don't have the confidence really, but I do want to. Well, I do actually. That's a lie because I'm totally into that right now. I just haven't. Yeah. I don't have the means to do it. So that's a lie. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is like my future house. Like I was just looking at houses earlier. Yesterday evening, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to turn this into like a hovel, you know, like. Mm-hmm. To turn it into that, like, very, like, when people walk in, they know, like, a witch lives here. Like, a cunning man, a witch lives here. You know, like, my altar is going to be, like, where traditional cunning folk and traditional witches, it's going to be on my hearth. I want to have a large fireplace, and there's going to be, you know, my altar is going to be there. And that's where I'll do my work, and that's where witches then did their work. And, like, I mean, you know, I want herbs hanging that I collected from my garden. You know, like, I'm a sucker for it. I don't need it. I just want it because it makes me feel powerful. But the thing is, I don't mind the aesthetic. I just mind when you're playing at being a witch.
Yeah.
So right. You feel like you're not playing at being a witch. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and like I said, too, you can dress like it. Just don't act like you are if you're not.
Right. I mean, but, like, it's funny because you mentioned sharing about Sabrina. And as I've said before, one of the key writers for that show is a practicing witch. He did an interview for Patheos. And you know, like even him doing his research and working with the other pagans and occult interested people that he works with, even they're more experienced. You know, like I had tons of people on my Facebook, respected authors who were all like. Going nuts when in the first season when she conjured the hellfire and they were like he was like I'm gonna be translating this, you know, and I'm like I get it, you know.
Yeah.
That's craft, you know, threatening erroneous spirits with you know, Gehenna and hellfire, that's craft through and through, you know what I mean? But even those people know what they're doing, you know what I'm saying? We're not handing this to tweenies and go have fun on All Hallows Eve, you know?
I mean, I wouldn't
like,
even try and throw
through,
hellfire
thumb
down.
Some of those. Thumb through some of those and just read us some of the things. And this isn't us saying that, no, you shouldn't just pick up a book and just, you know, start going at it. Because honestly, a lot of us did that. It's just read it before you start saying words and lighting candles and casting circles. Read through it first and really think about the implications of, like, oh, is this what I want from this? Yeah. Is this really what I want?
Yeah.
And while we're at warnings and recommendations, pay attention to who you read. I think that's the most important thing to remember when you're getting into looking for magic books is it's less about the topic and more about the author. Because if someone really knows their stuff, they'll often have really good books regardless of what they're talking about. But if it's someone who
they often
has
cite their sources.
Yes,
good
but if
writers
it's someone
often cite their sources.
And if it's someone who has a dodgy reputation, then you know to kind of steer clear of them. So like, for example, I would go out of my way to listen or to read anything from like, I don't know, who are some of your favorite occult authors, y'all? Would you just like list offhand?
Boy.
Oh man.
Oh boy.
Wow.
Penzek's always good. His stuff is very well thought out. Storm Fairywolf, I think.
Yeah.
It is Storm Fairywolf, right?
It is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I got them all mixed up.
Devin Hunter.
I really do like some Starhawk writings. She's a very good writer. Her essays are very just very on point.
Read the classic.
I do find comfort in Cunningham's stuff. He's really good for references for herbs and you know, like little spells, especially for like positive kind of energy things that you want to do. I find a lot of comfort in Cunningham. But yeah, I didn't know, see, that's the thing with me is I didn't know the authors and who they were and their reputations. I just started buying books that sounded interesting
true.
I could afford. But now with the internet being really a thing and there being a wealth of information on it, it is worth it to look it up. But also, don't just take people's, you know, just because a bunch of people say, oh, this person's trash, doesn't necessarily mean that they're trash. If you have a pretty strong sense of self, thumb through some books before you read them. It is always, you know, Barnes & Noble has like the chairs in there that you can sit down and read. That's if you are able to buy a Barnes & Noble. Sometimes not everyone can. I understand that. They are expensive. But at the very least, what you can do is you can go to Barnes & Noble and you can thumb through them. And as much as I hate recommending this, then you can go home and buy secondhand copies online if you
them. Or you can go to like
or library sometimes. There's a lot you can get through the library. A lot of the first books that I read actually came through the library system, which is why I was able to get my hands on like Cunningham and Buckland and stuff like that, because they were just readily available. But thumb through. If the content doesn't feel comfortable to you, if it leaves you with a weird feeling, you're not feeling right about it, you're like, I don't know about this, then it's probably not right for you.
Yeah.
And it's probably not going to sit well with you, and it's probably not good information. Now, I think that's not really the best advice for everyone, because some people can be very impressionable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people genuinely think terrible things, and they find books that have terrible things in them, and that just gives them ammunition, but I can't speak for those people. What I can speak is for who I believe the majority of our listeners, which are people who got it together enough to know, like, hey, that's fucked up, and hey, that's not fucked up, or hey, that's fucked up, but I just kind of want to read more about that. So, use your judgment. It's always important, and I think that's really what being that really might be like the core of being a witch is using your judgment in situations. You know, when is it appropriate to? Because not every solution requires a magical intervention. Not everything requires you to use your witchiness, your witchy powers. Well, it may be tempting to. Like, it may be tempting to, like, for every little thing, right? You know, oh, man, like, I keep missing that one bus in the morning to get to work. Why do I keep, oh, I'm just gonna, you know, witch the time schedule or something like that. Like, maybe you should just go to bed early. You know, it's things like that. You know, you don't always. I think that's what really marks a witch is a witch knows when to expend their power that they have in order to create that change, to create that ripple effect.
Yeah.
You have to really know when to pick and choose your battles, what you're going to really spend that time and energy on doing.
Yeah.
Know thyself.
Know thyself. Yes. Know thyself. That's very true.
And back to the part with Arthur's, because I realized I didn't get to say any that I've read. Light Angela, as I said before, but I really liked her introductory book. I've read some of Jason Miller's stuff, and his was pretty succinct if you're doing more like sorcery type work. I've read a lot of really obscure chaos magic books written by people who are just like Freighter WUD or like Freighter LS, you know, some really obscure ones. There's Peter Carroll, but I honestly, my opinion is that I hate the man. So I've read his books and I understand what he's talking about, but I think he's just an egotistical prick and I don't even want to read his works because of it. Yeah, there's also Veronica, I'm probably going to say this wrong, Veronica Kummer or
Kummer.
Yeah, she did Sorgatzak, Forestcraft, which is a book that I've gotten halfway through and put on pause, but I fucking love every bit of it. So, you know, just kind of find someone who speaks to you and see what they have to say about stuff and don't be afraid to bounce around a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think we can kind of wrap up the conversation on really where we're at, what we're doing, what it really means to be a witch.
Yeah.
Really... It's kind of like Scott was saying, you know, that quote, know thyself. Being a witch is, it's more than just an aesthetic. It's not just something you put on and take off. It really becomes a part of who you are. It's a part of your identity. You know, when you're at work, you're a witch. When you're at home, you're a witch. Like, you're just a witch at all times. You're not just a witch for the party. You're not just a witch at the club. And you're not just a witch at the witch events. It's important to really carry that with you, because there is a sense of responsibility that once you do have tapped into that power and you have access to that power and you can do things with that power, it's your responsibility to manage that effectively.
Yeah.
And to know when to intervene and when not to, which is really kind of the core of being a witch.
And I'd also say, you're going to fuck up. That's okay.
Just deal with it.
Learn from it. That's part of the path. Like, it's a messy journey.
I just want to tell people to definitely mess up. Like, please make mistakes.
You're going to fuck your timeline up. Just saying, it's fine. You'll deal with it eventually. But you're gonna do all kinds of weird things. You're going to make mistakes. And you're going to try and do stuff too big, too early. And... sometimes the ground will kind of sneak out from underneath you and you'll be falling into yourself a little bit. And that's kind of the point of it, you know, like no journey is truly clean and it's the potholes that really make it worth it, you know?
And this, if I may, to wrap my end up, exactly. The path of the witch isn't always clean. And it isn't always without its teeth. And the path of the witch is a path of self-mastery in every way that you could possibly imagine. It is to master yourself. And the thing is, it is about just getting there. That is so much more meaningful than actually becoming this guru or this, you know, which king or queen or which, you know, it is the path of self-mastery. And that in and of itself is what a witch is. It is a witch who strives to understand their nature and the nature around them and how those two things interact and other people's nature, right? And how we interact with each other. And we look at the bigger picture and the smaller picture and we dive deep, and we have to do that without fear. Well, with fear, but not afraid to go there. And I think that that's, at its core, what witchcraft is. Diving deep, doing the work, and going forward.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree 100%. And actually, Scott, you've kind of inadvertently, I guess without realizing it, set the tone for the next series of episodes. Of really what we're trying to do in this podcast. We are trying to move forward. We're trying to dig deep into topics that, you know, necessarily reading a book about it doesn't really always grasp, it doesn't really always explain, it doesn't dig into those deeper things. So we have a lot of topics planned that really dig into some aspects of the craft and being a queer practitioner of the craft. Which is really just dig deeper, because when you read a book, you have one side, you have one voice speaking at you, versus when you have this kind of conversation, you know, you have three different people that are talking about, you know, one topic. And then also we do want to bring in some other voices from the community, whether you be a follower of this podcast or maybe someone with a bit more, I don't know, I guess reputation. We're going to try and bring in some people with a little bit more reputation, and then some people that are just regular Joe Schmoes like us. Yeah. And I think that to really to get that conversation going and really hear everything of what we're talking about and dig deep into these topics. So that is what we have planned for this season, which is season 2. Of which is Betwixt. Last season, it was really just 2 episodes because we just took this break. And I thought about retconning things. I'm like, no, just for the sake of continuity. Season 1 had 2 episodes. Very sorry. Season 2 will have definitely more than 2 episodes.
A lot more.
Yes. We are still going to post twice a month. It's going to be on Wednesdays, just like it's always been. Which Wednesdays? Which is Betwixt Wednesdays? That's the way that I've remembered it, and I hope that's the way you've all remembered it.
It's right in the middle of the week.
It's right in the middle of the week. I think it's a great time. It's a great time. A lot of YouTubers and podcasts, I notice, release things on Fridays, and I'm kind of about that, because, like, on Fridays, I'm ready to get into the weekend. Like, I'm not listening to podcasts. I'm not doing any of that nonsense. Wednesday is kind of my day that I actually take to, like, collect myself and reflect on the beginning of the week and then focus on the rest of the week. So I like Wednesdays. It's going to stay at Wednesdays. We are dropping the Patreon. We are going to close that out. We're going to transfer the funds into just like a regular PayPal account kind of thing. We feel that asking for a constant subscription doesn't really make sense at the rate in which we put out content. If this was our 100% full-time job, then yeah, we could absolutely guarantee you that that content would come out no questions asked, with no issues. The thing is, we all work jobs, we all go to school, we all got shit going on, and we can't guarantee that. Things happen. So we have witchesbetwixt.com. We are currently building the website. I hope time this airs, we'll have like a nice basic framework for a website that people can really interact with, which you'll be able to find all of our social media links. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Patreon is no more, and there's no need for us to really have a presence on Tumblr. I think I'm kind of migrate some of those posts that we've made on Tumblr over to the blog or to the website, which will have a blog on it. Because there's really just no point, because we're gonna have a blog function on the website.
Yeah.
And if anyone feels so inclined to help us out financially, there'll just be a donate section on the website for you just to do like a one-time donation, and it'll be that. Realistically, to help us stay even, and so it doesn't cost anyone anything, if we made about, I would say, $30 a month, that would be perfect. 12 to host the podcast, and it's like 16 and change for the website, so to host the website every month. So yeah, really about $30 a month. If we can get that as consistent donations, I'd be totally happy about it. But yeah, that kind of ends the housekeeping section of this. Please stay tuned. We have a lot more episodes planned. We're really into this revival of the podcast. We're both like, we were messaging each other before we started recording. We're like, come on, we got to talk about witchcraft, like let's get this shit going. So we're all super excited. Our energy is definitely at its peak, and yeah, I hope you all stay tuned and enjoy what we have to bring you on Witches Betwixt.
It's gonna be fucking awesome.
It is gonna be awesome. It's gonna be great.
Bye.
See you guys later. Bye.